behind the ball. Woods puts it. And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters champion. One of the great comeback stories in American sports history.
And welcome into the Doug Russell Podcast. It is a tradition unlike any other. It gets underway on Thursday. It's back in April where it's supposed to be, but at least we had the Masters last year. For a while, it looked like that at least may have been in question on some level. But nevertheless, here we are back at Augusta National. Joining me on the program right now, he's a guy that I see every Saturday for Garbedian on Golf. You can listen to Garbedian on, the award-winning, by the way, Garbedian on Golf, Saturday mornings from 8 until 10 in Milwaukee on 97.3 The Game. That's also the same time that you can hear it if you're listening in Green Bay on WNFL Radio. And from 10 until noon, rather, on WTSO in Madison, Fox Sports Radio 1070. Chuck Garbedian, kind enough to join me here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Chuck, I appreciate the time. How are you today, my friend?
This is a tradition unlike any other, being on the Doug Russell Podcast. It's the most important thing going right now, and I'm doing wonderfully well. Hopefully you are the same. Thank you for asking me on.
Thank you for coming on. By the way, how'd you play today? I know that you played earlier today. How'd you do?
Did okay. We had a great time. Golf course is in exceptional shape. It's early April, and it's warm and sunny. What more could you ask for? Any round that you get in, you know, if you get a round in March, April, especially around these parts, that's golden. I mean, you just take advantage of every moment you can, and it was 70 and partly sunny all day today. So we had a great time.
Yeah, and as they say, it's going to rain the rest of the week, but that's why they invented Gore-Tex. So how special to you as someone who is as deep into the game of golf as you are? And really, when it comes to guys that are deep into golf, I think it's you and your playing partner today, Gary D'Amato, are the two people that I know the best that know the game of golf the best. How important is it to you? How much does it mean to have the Masters back in April at Augusta as opposed to November?
Well, I think what it does is it gets everything back to whatever's going to be the new normal, that you can kind of slot in and plan your life according to some of the bigger events, that you have the Players that takes place in March, the Masters in April. Then in May, you have the PGA Championship, where it was moved a couple of years ago. And then you go to June, and you have the U.S. Open, and in July, you have the Open Championship. This year, we're going to have a Ryder Cup in September. So it kind of gets everything, you know, back on track. And it's even more exciting with even if it's a limited amount of patrons, that there are patrons on the grounds. But it really signals maybe that we're kind of getting back to whatever the new normal is going to be. And you know, hopefully maybe appreciate things a little bit more because of the way that it was taken away from us so quickly.
How many times have you had a chance to go down to Augusta National? How many times have you been at the Masters?
I have been to the Masters zero times. And this is the reason why. My show usually starts, or had started, before I moved it up a month. And it started the week of the Masters. So there's no way that I could be down there untethered from the station and trying to send a signal back and trying to get everything down there. So I've never had the opportunity to go down. As a matter of fact, I was going to go down in November, but I just missed the cutoff for the press credential. So they had their limited amount of people that they were going to let in as kind of a group of pool reporters. And so I didn't go down in November either, which I would have loved to have done. I would have done that in a heartbeat.
Is that the one that's missing off of, I know doing the show, it makes it difficult to get to probably, I would think, many of the majors, but is that the one that's on the bucket list for you more than anybody else? Because when I talk to golf fans, man, that's the one that pops up more than any other. I just want to see Azalea Lane. I just want to see the green grass. And if Amen Corner is as beautiful in person as it is on television.
The thing that's different about Augusta National is the fact that it's the same venue for the major every year, and yet it's different every year because the people at Augusta National and the Masters will make tweaks to the golf course and tweaks to the surrounding areas so that even though you may have a yardage book that goes back 5, 10, 15 years, you still have to go through it again and again and again to make sure all the lines are the same. It's someplace that you really want to see. And I know for a fact from people that I've talked to and dealt with is the fact that television doesn't do justice in terms of the elevation changes. The fact that you go up and down and it's on a beautiful piece of property, it's kind of landlocked a little bit. And the Masters folks go around and they kind of buy parcels here and there to kind of open up things and make things a little bit bigger. But yeah, it's a bucket list trip for anyone if you can find a way to get down there. And Augusta National recognize that. The people at the Masters recognize that. So every year there's a lottery for tickets. And so you have an opportunity to kind of cash in and maybe take that once in a lifetime opportunity to go down and spend some time on the grounds, walk up Magnolia Lane and take a look around Amen Corner and kind of go, you know, this is really something special. There are a lot of great golf courses, especially in the state of Wisconsin. you know, you'll have Whistling Straits, you have Erin Hills, they both held majors, you have Sand Valley as a destination, you have Century World that's going to be holding a U.S. Senior Open in 2023. There's a lot of great golf in the state of Wisconsin, but going to a major and kind of seeing how it's done in another place, especially one as iconic as the Masters, is truly something.
I want to get to some of those other golf courses in just a few minutes. I do want to ask you about the field this year. Dustin Johnson is your reigning champion. He was finished 20 under par, a record last year, won by 5 strokes the year prior to that. I guess we'll get into Tiger in a second. Obviously, he's not going to be playing for a while. But as far as this field is concerned, who do you like? Who's playing well? I know Jordan Spieth just won finally for the first time in, what, 3 or 4 years the other day. But who does this golf course play the best to, in your opinion?
Well, the people that I've talked to so far this week, and it's only, you know, Sunday, Monday, as we're talking, one of the interesting constraints to this will be if the golf course is firm and fast, because if it is, it completely changes the topography, no pun intended, of the entire leaderboard, simply because it brings a lot of people into play and it nullifies the advantage that some players have. So if you're Dustin Johnson and you primarily like to kind of hit a cut off the tee, and you're kind of hoping, you know, you'll know that it'll stop at a certain distance. If it's firm and fast, you may get a really hard first kick, and it may bound into someplace that you weren't anticipating. And Augusta National, more than anything else, is you have to be accurate off the tee, but it's really a second-shot golf course, and you have to make sure that if you're going to miss a green or miss, you know, your target, that you miss it in the proper place so that you can get up and down from the adventure that you've now put yourself into. So if you're DJ, it's an opportunity. If you're someone like Justin Thomas, who won the Players, which is a big-time tournament, it's an opportunity. If you're Jordan Spieth, you're coming off a win. It certainly it nullifies the pressure of feeling like, I've got to win. When is this going to happen? And it happened at the Texas Valero Open, which is great for him. And maybe you ride momentum into the next event. But golf is a really funny game that you can, you know, you play the same course 4 days in a row, and it's never the same 4 days. None of those, you know, you may have it one day where you see a guy shoot, you know, 60-something, and the next day shoot 70-something. It's just how the game is. It's amped up even more when it's a major, simply because you are on a familiar venue. It's someplace that you have played before if you're someone who has qualified and played in more than one Masters. But it's still not the same golf course, and it depends on what the conditions are. You have to figure that Dustin Johnson had the shortest reign of a champion in the 6 months. He won it in November. Now he's got to defend it in April, and it's completely two different golf courses as you're coming into this week.
And then you look at some of the champions of this tournament as well, and I've always found it fascinating because, you know, you get your Dustin Johnsons, you get your Tiger Woods, you get your Sergio Garcias, who had his breakthrough in 2017, and then you get your guys like your Danny Willetts and your Patrick Reeds, and I know he's had a couple of wins on the tour. Charles Schwartzel won it in 2011. The 1 year that I did get to cover the Masters was in 2003 when Mike Weir won it in a playoff, and if I'm not mistaken, that's the only top five finish he's ever had in a major. So every once in a while, you get one of these outliers that kind of breaks through and wins the Masters. I mean, let's take a guy, for example, like a Danny Willett, who otherwise, if he hadn't won the Masters, I don't know how many casual fans would ever have heard of Danny Willett, and yet he will forever be known as a Masters champion. What does that do for a guy?
Well, when you win a major, it opens up several doors. It puts you in a different level, even if you only have one major. Look at Rich Beam. Rich Beam has turned one major at the PGA Championship at Hazeltine into, you know, a Sky Sports career. I mean, it's everything. It elevates you to another level because you've been able to perform your craft at the highest level against what should be the toughest field. Now, at Augusta National, it's usually the smallest field. As majors go, the PGA Championship would probably be the strongest field out of all of them, but it's interesting with, you know, you win a major if you're not really, it depends on how you see yourself, your self-esteem value. If you're Mike Weir and you go, okay, I won a major, now what do I do? If you're, you know, Danny Willett, I won a major. When Danny Willett won his major, he evaporated about 6 months, 12 months after that. He just disappeared from tournament golf because he was trying so hard. You try to live up to what you've accomplished instead of just playing the game that you had. You happen to be the best player in the field that week at that course. And sometimes that happens the week of a major, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it happens in other weeks, and you win the Texas Valero Open. And that's nothing disparaging against the Texas Valero Open, but it's different. You could have 5 Texas Valero Opens on your resume, but if you have 1 Masters, that trumps it. Majors trump everything, no matter what. And it's Ryder Cups are great. They're excellent. They're so much fun. It's great to be in that team environment. But it's a different kind of atmosphere with a Ryder Cup than it is with a major. In a major, it is crowded and lonely all at the same time, simply because you're staring at this thing going, man, I'm within just reach of being almost immortal in the game of golf, that I'm going to have something that not too many people can have, and I have an opportunity to do this. And then at the same time, you're all by yourself out there. Good luck, kid. Hope this works out for you. Andy North is royalty in the state of Wisconsin when it comes to major championship wins. He's got two U.S. Opens. He's only got three tournament career wins. Two of them are U.S. Opens. Doesn't matter. Once you win it, they can't take it away from you. Whether you're Trevor Immelman, whether you're Danny Willett, whether you're Mike Weir, whether you're Zach Johnson, you're going to get one thrown in there every once in a while, and it's fascinating to see what happens after that. And you know, you take a look at Zach Johnson. He backed it up with a win at a British. But again, it's hard to live up to the hype, and it's even harder to live up to the hype when you're the one that's been doing the hype.
Yeah, Danny Willett, by the way, the Masters that he won in 2016, that's the only PGA Tour win that he's ever had. That's the one. That's congratulations. Look, if you're going to win one, that might as well be it, right?
Yep, win the big one. It doesn't matter what it is, because once you win it, you win it. They can't take it away from you. It's yours forever. Thanks. Appreciate it.
The Masters as a golf tournament has had so many incredible moments, so many signature moments over the course of the history of the game. But take me back to 2 years ago. What did Tiger Woods comeback win? And I don't mean comeback in the tournament in and of itself, but his comeback. And I know he's got another one that he's facing right now. But, you know, he hadn't won a major championship in, what, a decade? And then he wins the Masters in 2019. What did that do for him, his legacy, the Masters as a golf tournament, and for the game of golf?
Well, it cemented it, and simply because of, you know, he didn't really need to do anything else. If he hadn't done anything else, if he had stayed at 14 majors and 82 wins on the PGA Tour, that's quite a career. No one's even come close to that if you take a look at it. And if you go through the history of the game, if you tried to get to 14, now 15 majors, if you tried to get to 15 majors, there's only four a year. Even if you won just one a year, you'd have to win one a year for 15 years. That's an incredible accomplishment to have that kind of longevity and that kind of sustained excellence. Tiger's a different breed simply because of the way he does things and how he does things. And I think if you see some of the documentary things that have ever been said about them or read any of the books, Armin Contain has done a great book on Tiger Woods. Michael Bamberger has done an exceptional book on Tiger Woods. If you have the opportunity, read them both. They're exceptional reads. But one thing that's always in there is, there is no difference with Tiger from the first shot on Thursday to the last shot on Sunday. He grinds over every shot, every time, and it's hard to sustain that kind of excellence at that level. The accident that recently took place, it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out, because now you have more physical limitations piled upon the other physical limitations that he had. I think he was leading the league in career back surgeries at this point, and was supposed to go in for an MRI the day that the accident took place. It was supposed to happen later that afternoon. So there's no telling where he is physically or where he's going to be. When you go back and look at that Masters again, you see a guy who doesn't necessarily overpower the golf course, but certainly plays to his strengths and makes sure that he executes the shots that he has to, because when they all got to 12, Tiger was the only one that found terra firma. Everybody else had put it in the water in one way, shape, or form, and kind of backed up and evaporated during the course of the round, where he played his strength, made sure it was over the bunker on the left-hand side on 12 and gave himself a two-putt par and walked up to the next tee. The other guys all put it in the water, and that's the difference in experience when you have still the ability physically to play the game, but also have the mental fortitude and ability to know what you need to do, how to execute it, and then execute it. It was a tour de force to watch it, because it was fascinating just to see how he took apart the golf course and how he waited for the others to make the mistake. And to be honest with you, that's how Jack Nicklaus won a majority of his majors, is he just played the golf course to the best of his ability and he watched other guys come apart. And Brooks Koepka has a certain way of also looking at that majors are the easiest to win, because half the field eliminates itself because they go, my gosh, we're at a major. This is going to be really hard. So when you look at Tiger, Tiger's the total package between both the physical attributes and the mental attributes that's needed to not only be excellent, but sustain excellence over a period of time.
You mentioned a few minutes ago the Ryder Cup, which, of course, was supposed to happen last September, but because of the pandemic, it was pushed off until September of 2021. In your opinion, is that the last major golf event that Whistling Straits is going to have, considering that they moved the PGA from August to earlier in the year, and maybe the golf course isn't quite set up for when they're now playing the PGA, but, you know, they had three of them within a span of, what, 11 years, I think, which was pretty unprecedented in Wisconsin state history. But is that it for Whistling Straits after this September, in your opinion?
Well, I don't know if it's it. I think it'll depend on how things kind of flow. The problem with having the PGA Championship in May and having Whistling Straits associated with the PGA Championship in May is simply that you need about 90 days prior to the event for the build-out for the villages that they build in terms of merchandise and other amenities for patrons that are coming in and experiencing the tournament. You can't start building in Wisconsin as we saw this year. They would have had to start to build in February. It snowed three times in February, and there would have been no way you would have been able to do that. And so consequently, really the only thing that would probably be available to Whistling Straits as a whole, as an entity, would be a United States Open or a United States Senior Open as they've held there. But those would about be the only ones because of the time frame needed, not necessarily to prepare the golf course, but to prepare the grounds for everything that comes with that. As you saw with 2017 and you saw the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, you know, there was an entire city created on the property before you even got to the golf course. And it was a tour de force in how it was put together and how it was executed, because those things aren't easy to do. And you need a lot of moving parts that kind of mesh together in the same way to make sure that everything that you need to have happen happens. And so for Whistling, I don't know, unless the PGA moved again, which I just don't see happening simply because of all the moving parts involved with all the different tours, with the PGA Tour, with the European Tour, with the other majors having to kind of shuffle around again, I just don't see that happening. If there was going to be, I believe there's going to be a major, it would be either a women's major, again, a U.S. Women's Open, and maybe at Whistling, or it's going to be a U.S. Senior, simply because of the time frame involved with what they're trying to accomplish. But it would be very hard for them, for Whistling Straits, to have a PGA. It's not to say it would be impossible, but it would be extremely difficult, and everything would have to go right.
Let's talk about Erin Hills for a second as well. Of course, I thought, as long as you're talking about the U.S. Open, they did a marvelous job, not only building out that city, but everything I thought ran really smoothly that week for the U.S. Open four years ago, I guess now, as well. The U.S. Open itself is scheduled out until 2028. I know that they like to give, 7 years of notice before they tell you when you're going to get that next U.S. Open. Is Erin Hills in the mix for it? And what has to happen for Wisconsin to be back in the mix? I don't know if it's ever going to be like it was in our last decade, because that was pretty unprecedented, but something that kind of resembles getting more major golf events here in the state.
Well, that was the start of Brooks Koepka's run. I mean, everybody's like, wow, who is this guy? And then he won another one and then won two PGAs. And it's suddenly, you know, Brooks Koepka's on everybody's radar all of a sudden, because he ended up breaking the screen and going, here I am. Everybody pay attention now. So, you know, it was electric leading up to it. It was electric the week that it happened. It was incredible. I've had the good fortune of working for the PGA Tour Network on XM and Sirius. It's a blast, but it's really funny because, you know, the circus comes to town. It puts on a show and then it leaves and goes to the next town. You know, when you had the ramp up for Erin and the United States Open, one of the cool things was just everything leading up to it, the countdown and how many days and the golf course was closed and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And the governor was in to do an introductory press conference. And there are so many things that happened with it and made that week so magical for the state of Wisconsin. It would be great if it's going to happen again. It's interesting to see, but money drives everything. And I don't know that the United States Golf Association made the type of money that they thought they were going to make off of it. Maybe that would be different if they did it again, because things are going to be structured a little bit differently. It's fascinating to see as a golf course. It was funny because people were complaining about the way the golf course was set up, that it was kind of wide open and it was kind of there for bombers. If you remember, rankings 1, 2, and 3 in the world golf rankings all missed the cut. So if the golf course was such a pushover, how did these three guys who were the best three players in the world at that time miss the cut? So the neat thing about golf is it's all about the numbers. And if the numbers don't care how old you are. They don't care how far you hit it. They don't care anything about that. Here's the score. This is the score you have to shoot to make the cut to be around for the weekend. Here's the score you're going to need to shoot if you want to win the thing. And that's the best thing about it, is there is nothing discriminatory about that at all. Here's the number. Either you shoot it and you're in and you play the weekend and you try to make something happen, or you don't. And that's it. And I would be extremely sad if Erin didn't get a chance to have a second U.S. Open.
Chuck Garbedian from Garbedian on Golf joining us here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Tell us about the show. It's what, a now year number 16, and I know it's moved around from station to station to station. As I mentioned, you're on in three markets right now, obviously in Milwaukee on the flagship, 97.3 The Game, but also on WNFL in Green Bay, WTSO, Fox Sports 1070 in Madison. Tell us about the show, where the idea came from, and how you've been going for 16 years.
Well, you know, it's funny, you look back and suddenly it's 16 years. In May, we have, I believe it's May 8th, we have our 400th episode ever, regular season episode, which is, I'd mentioned that to a couple people who are radio veterans and who are broadcast veterans, and they were like, really? And I was like, yeah, and they're like, that's a huge deal. And it's something that I do. It's a labor of love. It's something that I completely enjoy. I've been fortunate that I was introduced to the game of golf by my dad at a very young age. And had the ability to play it a little bit. I had done some things with the Wisconsin PGA, do some things with the Wisconsin State Golf Association. They have been great supporters of the program throughout all the years. We have a great group of sponsors that are on the show, and it's been just a thrill to do it. When we started it, the way it started was Gary D'Amato was doing a radio show. I filled in for about 4 weeks, I think it was, or 6 weeks during one of the years that he was doing the Olympics, because he was overseas doing the Olympics, and I sat in and did it. And then the season ended, and then the next year he was like, you know, I don't really like doing this. You should do this. And I was like, what? And it just kind of worked from there. I talked to a couple people about who might be interested in sponsoring it. I was working at a station at the time that had no, like, local weekend programming. And so they were like, I kind of went and said, I'd like to do this. And they were like, great. And then from that point, it just kind of blossomed and mushroomed into something. There's a lot of people who have been on the show. David Cohn, the executive director of the First Tee Southeast Wisconsin, has been on the show. I don't know how many. He's like the Matt Damon of the show. He'll be there most weeks. But there have been other people who have been extremely supportive. Gary Van Sickle, who was at Sports Illustrated and then was at Golf World and now is at Morning Read. Gary D'Amato, who's the Hall of Famer. Rex Hager from Golf Channel. Todd Lewis from Golf Channel. Brandel Chambly from Golf Channel. They've all been friends, and they've all, you know, offered encouragement and counsel. I've been fortunate to have some great program directors in my day, Tim Scott among them, who have helped shepherd the show along and help make it what it is, and pretty much went, look, it's yours, we'll get out of the way. You know, you have to make sure you hit the time cue so that everybody has it. And I greatly appreciate the support of the people in Madison, Green Bay, Milwaukee, and on the iHeart app where you can hear the show, who support it, because it's I have a blast doing it. It's just a lot of fun to catch up with everybody and talk to everybody. It's something that I'm incredibly passionate about, and it's nice to have something that you do that you really love to do, and it kind of makes up for everything else that goes on during the course of the day, because, you know, at the end of the week, you have something that you're going to do from 8 to 10 on WNFL and on the game 97.3, and that's going to air from 10 to noon in Madison, and you just, you know, hope people listen to it and enjoy it. I mean, my guideline for doing the show is if I don't enjoy it, if I was just listening to it, you know, is it entertaining? And I think the segment that you and I did last week, when we had a guest, Stephen Hoffman, who's from Boston Scott Golf, will be coming back on. He had a family emergency. He couldn't come on the show. And you and I just riffed for 12 minutes on what the Masters Champions dinner would be if we did it. You know, that's kind of fun stuff that I think people want to know, because that's what it is how does that happen? And if it's not fun, then it's not going to be good. And that's, you know, that's what I try to do every day. So, and I'm fortunate, and I'll say this, and this is not sucking up in any way, shape, or form. I'm fortunate to have you as a producer, because you're someone who's experienced, you're talented, you've sat in the chair where you have to do things on air, and you understand how it works, and I completely enjoy working with you.
Well, likewise, I enjoy it as well. It's been a lot of fun to be a part, even a small part of the show the last, I guess, couple of months now, over on, again, 97.3 The Game from 8 until 10 Saturday mornings. That's also where you can hear it live on WNFL Radio in Green Bay, and from 10 until noon if you're in Madison on Fox Sports 1070 The Game. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And anytime you want to talk about, you know, what you would like to have for your champions dinner, to me, it's all about the surf and turf. I think that is a worthy champions dinner. But after you win a couple of green jackets, you know, Tiger's got five of them, you know, bring on the milkshakes. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, you got to mix it up a little bit. There's no question about it. I think you have to have it. Just the problem with the milkshakes is the Memorial, Jack Nicklaus's tournament, is notorious for having the best milkshakes on tour. Like, people, like, even if you don't like milkshakes, if you go there, and they will make you anything you want. But whatever, they have, like, a standard every day. And then they have, like, what do you want? And they'll put it together. And they're unbelievable. They are literally, when you have one, you're like, man, I go for a milkshake. And then you remember you had one at Jack's place, and you're going, Yeah, there's nothing as good as that.
Chuck, I appreciate the time. Enjoy the first couple of rounds of the Masters until I see you on Saturday morning. And yeah, again, it's a fun show to be a part of. And thank you so much for the time to be on my show, the Doug Russell Podcast. Again, available on the iHeartRadio app.
Thank you, my friend. All the best.
You too. There he goes. Chuck Garbedian. Garbedian on Golf. You can listen to it statewide, or at least in three markets, Milwaukee, Madison, and Green Bay. I guess they're the three largest markets in the state of Wisconsin. Saturday mornings from 8 until 10 on 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee and on WNFL in Green Bay. And then again from 10 until noon on WTSO AM 1070, Fox Sports 1070 The Game in Madison. So be sure to check out his show. And if you can't catch it live, certainly you can catch it on the iHeartRadio app, right where you can catch this podcast as well. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Coming up tomorrow, there's going to be a news conference in Madison. At least this is according to Jeff Patricus, where Barry Alvarez's retirement will be formally announced. We've known this has been coming for, I guess, a little bit more than a week now. And the, I guess, reporting of it probably accelerated the official announcement. We didn't think that we were going to have an announcement for at least a couple of weeks. Well, it looks like that's going to happen tomorrow. So coming up on our next show, we're going to have some remembrances from some of Barry Alvarez's first players. Now, we already had Scott Nelson on from WIBA Radio in Madison, but Scott Nelson was a freshman on Don Morton's last team. And you may remember Scott Nelson from those early great Badgers teams, or at least that last season that he played was the year that they first went to and won the Rose Bowl, the 1993 season. Now, they had been there in the 50s and 60s, but in this modern era, this Barry Alvarez era of Wisconsin athletics, it was really a game that, I've said this a million times, it was a game that meant more to the state of Wisconsin at the time than when the Packers went to the Super Bowl. And I stand by that because nobody saw Wisconsin going to Pasadena. Nobody saw it. It was unfathomable. And we had been so browbeaten into submission by bad football since the Lombardi era that it was unfathomable that one of our teams, either the Badgers or the Packers, would capture the national attention. And when the Packers went to Super Bowl 31 in New Orleans, don't get me wrong, it was a huge deal. I don't want to downplay how big of a deal that was. What I'm saying is I think a lot of other people downplay how much the state of Wisconsin was just enthralled by the Badgers going to Pasadena just a few years earlier. So I spoke with Scott Nelson a couple of weeks ago. Maybe I'll bring that conversation back for a second play, but also a couple of new conversations with some of his former players, some of Barry Alvarez's former players from that Rose Bowl team, some of Scott Nelson's teammates I'm going to talk to on our next Doug Russell podcast as Barry Alvarez makes his intentions known. And again, we've seen this coming for a while now, but Barry Alvarez is going to step away as the University of Wisconsin's athletic director. Again, he's 74 years old. He's got nothing to prove anymore. He has turned, along with Pat Ricker, and if you want to go back to Donna Shalala, they're the ones that have turned the Wisconsin athletic department from something that was an afterthought, that was, in some cases, an embarrassment to the university and the Big Ten, and they've turned it into a powerhouse. And everything that Barry Alvarez will have said about him positively over however long this transition period is going to be, he will have earned. But again, looking forward to our next show, which will take a look back at what made Barry Alvarez such a special football coach and why he excelled as the Badgers athletic director for the last 16 years. All right, my thanks to Chuck Garbedian for joining me on the program. We will see you next time right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.